What do Kansas Cityans expect from higher education? We went to find out, and here's what we heard.
What I was expecting out of it is the American dream that they sold us. Go to school, get your education so you can make something of yourself, and you could take care of your family.
I think the most important thing a person could do is educate themselves. I'm like a sponge. I just soak it all up. But I did not come to learn half of it, okay? I come to learn it all.
I went to college because I love math, and I only wanted to study math my whole life. I didn't even get what I wanted because I had to study all the subjects when I got to college.
I believe it should be affordable to all. Not for those that can afford it, it should be for everyone.
If someone's having a hard time staying focused and they aren't motivated to study and read and advance themselves, then college is a good springboard for getting there.
What was taught to us, go to school, get your education, you know, so you can make something of yourself. It wasn't go to school, get your education, and beware of college loans, or be aware of the fact that you might not get a job after I got the education. Oh, by the way, there are no jobs available.
When higher education saddles people with crippling debt, the job prospects at the finish line are hard to ignore. But is that the point of higher education? Have we abandoned quaint ideas like understanding the human condition, learning for its own sake, or even becoming part of an informed citizenry? Are those concepts totally out of touch with today's reality? I'm Gina Kaufman. What do you expect out of higher ed? Well, that probably depends a lot on who you are. Professors and administrators may not have the same goals as students and parents, and if you're the first generation in your family to attend college, the expectations and meaning you attach to that degree might be different from someone a few blocks away whose entire family has multiple degrees. So call in and share your perspective at 816-235-2888. Let's start by looking at the big picture. Doug Letterman is the editor and co-founder of Inside Higher Education. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Gina. Great to be here.
You did a broad assessment of higher education to see where the industry is thriving and where it's not. Is that right?
Sure, I did. It was a strange exercise called a SWOT exercise, which is supposed to look at the strengths and weaknesses and opportunities and threats of a company or, in this case, an industry. And it was a really interesting exercise for me because I've been covering this stuff for 30 years.
So what kinds of things did you discover?
Well, a lot of the historical strengths, like the fact that there's a lot of diversity in higher education and a history of excellence, are actually proving to be problems now because it is very difficult to get movement in a particular direction, to get changes in an industry. And there's a lot of self-satisfaction and uncertainty about the need for change. And yet we're seeing lots of things suggesting that higher education isn't fully working the way it is.
Can you tease that out a little bit? Both
sure.
The self-satisfaction and reluctance to think change is necessary and what tells you that, no, it probably is.
Well, so let's focus on the latter first, because I think that's the most important thing. The data still show us that higher education works for many people. I think the way you introduced the topic was really useful, because it is an individual, largely it should be an individual thing. It doesn't work for everybody. All the data we look at are averages. And so on average, going to college still makes sense. There were just data out from the federal government this morning that the average, that somebody who goes to college and gets a degree has a significantly better labor outcomes and lots of other outcomes than somebody who only goes to high school. So that is still true. And
wait, but what other kinds of outcomes? Because when we talk about why we're doing it, the jobs piece of it is huge, but not the only one.
Well, it isn't, and part of the reason, and you've again zeroed in on some really good issues already, just in your little introduction. The labor market outcomes are increasingly becoming the way we judge things, and I think there's real danger in that. It makes total sense because I do think that is important and maybe primary, but it certainly shouldn't be the only thing. But it is one of the easiest things to measure. Most of the other things that a lot of us believe a higher education should produce, and you mentioned them again in your intro, so informed citizenry, better health outcomes, more voting, learning. We don't know how to measure learning. We really don't. We don't have good ways of measuring a lot of the things. The salary outcomes and whether people have a job is easy to measure.
Why do we have to measure?
Well, that's a very good question. A lot of people in higher education don't like the idea of having to measure, and higher education has been immune from measurement, and that's one of the reasons why, going back to your, the fact that higher education has historically been seen as successful makes a lot of people think, well, why are we being asked to measure now? The truth is, most industries, most things we do, we want to measure. We're now measuring whether hospitals are safe by death rates, and we didn't used to do that. I think it's probably unfair to expect everything to be measurable, but I think that people want. So, okay, well, let me. The reason there's a pressure to measure is because of the cost. I mean, that's the thing. All these things link back together. But I think the reason people are increasingly asking for evidence of how things are working is because the cost has been rising. I think if higher education wasn't viewed as so expensive, people wouldn't be as demanding of evidence that it's actually worth it. That's what's changed, is that we're now expecting higher education to prove its value.
There's an outcome you talked about that I haven't heard a lot about: better health outcomes for people who have a higher education.
The idea is that most people, when you get information and learn about what's good for you, behave better and treat themselves better. So there is a belief that, and I think there have been studies over the years that show that people with, and it's a little hard to tease out because there's no question there are data that show that better educated people are healthier, but better educated people historically have also all typically been wealthier. So it's a little hard to make causal connections between going to college and being healthier. I would not pretend to say that that's necessarily the case, but there's no question that if you look broadly, there are data that show all sorts of what most of us would describe as positive outcomes that are associated with greater levels of education, including better health.
You know, I mean, there might be people who balk at the idea of even evaluating higher ed as a quote-unquote industry.
There are, and when I'm speaking to college faculty members, I tend to avoid using the word, but it's an industry. I mean, I've been covering this stuff for 30 years, and it's one of the you know, it's a many, many billion dollar enterprise that contributes lots to our society and also gets lots of tax breaks. So I write for a publication that covers it as a sort of an industry. And so I treat it that way. And I think it deserves treatment that way. But I totally understand why one as a citizen might not want to think of it that way, or certainly one as a professor.
Well, so that gets me to the idea that you were saying that that there is a lot of evidence that higher education needs to adapt, but that there was a lot of reluctance within higher education to recognize that. Can you explain that?
Well, there's, again, if you've been, let's say you've been a professor for 25 years or higher education has been for a long, long time viewed as one of the most respected, and just it's been on a pedestal, and that has started changing. And so if you've been working in higher education or you went through it and believe in it, why you wouldn't necessarily think higher education, the rest of the world looks at our higher education this system and thinks it's the crown jewel. And so the history of excellence makes people think, well, why are we suddenly, have we suddenly gotten terrible? I don't think so.
So there's this idea of it's untouchable.
Well, there has been. And I think that has been, I mean, we've seen it's become increasingly a target for governments, and we've certainly seen people. And again, I think that's related. I mean, the big changes in the last few years were that student debt hit $1 trillion, and that was cumulative, and that happened over a long period of time, but it got there. And then after the recession, I think there were a lot of college graduates ending up living in their parents' basement, and I think that contributed to a perception that higher education was not delivering what it at least what a lot of people think it is, what a lot of people go get it for, which is to advance in their careers.
Right. You go to college and then you have this lifestyle, this imagined future lifestyle.
Yeah. And Kansas Cityans you interviewed, you know, talked about that American dream. And I think that's been very much something that higher education has promised. It has, and higher education has, we have a very, compared to the rest of the world, we have a very small d democratic higher education system, but it doesn't deliver its benefits equally. You are still much, much likelier to get a college degree if you're from the top percent, you know, top quartile of our population than from the bottom. So there's still real, and that's where I said it's really sort of an individualized, needs to be looked at much more individually.
Do you think we're seeing a cultural shift right now in terms of what we think is the purpose of a college education, like a big cultural shift?
Well, we're seeing a very political shift, and the politicians sort of claim to be speaking on behalf of the public. I think it's, and what I mean that is, I mean that the we're increasingly seeing politicians and governments, when they are judging higher education, use an economic, view it through an economic prism. And I think that is, like I said, I think that's got real danger, because I think that leads to the elevation of certain fields of study. It makes people want to push STEM, science and technology people, and away from the humanities, which I think are deeply important. We're seeing a real diminution in the willingness of, in the interest of people to get a liberal arts degree, which I think is very worrisome.
What is the importance to society that, I mean, if you're saying it's dangerous to push people away from liberal arts and away from the humanities, why?
Maybe we should take a look at our current political environment and the level of discourse in our country. We're seeing people not really understand why the First Amendment matters. We're seeing people not know how to engage civilly with ideas that are different from theirs. We're seeing, I think, an increasing lack of critical thinking in how people assess the news that they're getting. I mean, there are lots of things that the liberal arts and the humanities contribute to our society and our culture and our civic operation.
Well, that's really interesting, because we're asking what a college education is for, but we haven't asked who it's for. And that answer implies that it's not just for the individual. It's not just for the person who gets it. It's that
Correct.
It's for the collective.
And that is perhaps the biggest shift that we've seen in the last 10 to 20 years is an increasing sense. And I probably just contributed to it a little earlier when I was talking about how it should be looked at individually. What I was talking about is the choice about what kind of education to get and what an individual person needs and what the right kind of education is for that individual should be an individual decision. But one of the things that's shifted is that we have increasingly looked at higher education as what's called a private benefit, how it benefits the person. We've moved away to some extent from looking at it as a public benefit, which is all the other things that having a educated society contribute to society more broadly beyond what the individual gets out of it. So that's probably been the biggest change. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say, does that make sense though? I mean, if someone's paying for it and paying a lot for it, that person then has the attitude of being a customer. And it's hard to argue with that.
Well, yes. But that's been the other big shift we've seen is a shift away from a cost shift to the individual. The state, I mean, in most states, there's been a major pullback in the proportion of the institutional budget that is supported by the state. This is obviously for public state universities, like all the University of Missouri campuses and the various the University of Kansas and all the institutions in your region. we have seen a cost shift, and that is so. This is circular. Like a lot of important conversations, there's a lot of sophistication and complication to it. But we've seen the colleges go before over. We've seen higher education go to the legislature in the last 20 years and say, you need to support us because we help people get jobs, and we contribute to the economy. And then we've seen the states cut back and say, well, if we're primarily supporting individuals, we'll let them pay for it. So we're seeing these things are interconnected. But yes, to the extent that people, and so that's why I say I think one of the reasons we're seeing more attention to outcomes for individuals is because individuals are increasingly picking up a greater proportion of their tab for their own educations.
Doug Letterman, stay with me, okay?
Will do.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll hear from you about what you expect out of higher education. Is it warm and fuzzy and idealistic, or do you just want a good job when you're done? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. We want to hear from parents and students. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman asking whether we all expect the same thing out of higher education because with looming debt and a changing job market, people are asking more than they used to whether it's worth it. But you can't answer that question without knowing what it is you're hoping to get out of the deal. So we're discussing that with Doug Letterman. He's been joining us from Inside Higher Education. Hi again, Doug.
Hi there.
We're also going to get to the switchboard, and you can join this conversation at 816-235-2888. But I'd like to introduce our other guests who you'll be speaking with when you call. Michelle Maher is with us from UMKC's Department of Education, where she teaches higher ed administration. Hi.
Hey.
Does what we expect depend on who we are? Like, parents expect one thing, students another, professors yet another, and apparently legislators and government officials something else entirely.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that that has been a conversation that has become more and more prominent. And it definitely depends on where you stand and pretty much what you're paying.
Well, I mean, would you say that you've witnessed a change in what people expect out of higher education in the time that you've been doing this?
Absolutely. And going back to the late 1980s, when I was a student, we thought very differently about higher education and its outcomes. I thought because, frankly, the tuition was very low and it just wasn't something that you thought, is this really worth it for me? For me, I wanted to go to college. This was something that was part of what I wanted to do. And it never occurred to me, like, what kind of other outcomes will I get? Is this the best use of my time? Is this the best use of my money? I think we've become a very different type of society in the past, say, 30 years.
Did it seem like part of growing up?
Absolutely. Going to college for many people, not for all, because college students have become very diverse, and we are now seeing many people returning to the classroom. But for those people who are traditionally 18 to 24, college is very much about growing up, becoming your own person, becoming who you are.
I wonder if the changes that we've talked about so far this hour have affected the way you prepare future administrators in your classroom to think about higher ed when they go out in the world and start shaping schools.
Yes. Society has changed, and so higher education changes, and we are basically a mirror of society. And so when we think about how to best prepare two and four-year educators and administrators, we have to think about the society in which they live, the problems, the concerns, the issues. So it's much more than simply textbook material. It's more how to engage with a very changing population, very different understandings of what it is to be educated.
What do you mean by a changing population?
More people are coming to the table in terms of who gets to be educated these days. And I think that's part of the major dialogue we're having in this country is, as the price of it goes up, who gets to come and be educated? Who is educated? Who should be educated?
What do you think, in a perfect world, the goal of higher education should be? Or is there one answer to that?
There's probably not one answer. My perfect world is people would be the capacity to be a critical thinker and make decisions in their own best interest.
So stay with me. We're going to turn now to Carlos Penaloza. He's with us from Metropolitan Community College, where he's the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs. Carlos, chime in here. What do you think the goal of higher education would be in a perfect world?
Well, in a perfect world, we have to prepare individuals to be critical thinkers and be able to just take anything and make something of it. And so that's really the general education arm of higher education. In my mind, anyone that's driven can take a textbook and self-learn, but there's more to higher ed than just that self-learn component. There's learning about your environment, being able to communicate, being able to take anything and make something of it. And that piece has to be embedded into an academic curriculum.
What's your sense of how the expectations of students align with the expectations of professors and administrators and so forth?
Sure. The expectations vary greatly. You have populations even within the student side that will want to be that job readiness. Others want to learn a little bit more. Among the faculty, we all tend to want our students to learn a great deal and continue moving forward. For the traditional general education side of the house, it's just continued education. You're always a learner.
Isn't the idea that learning more and being prepared for a job would be at odds? Isn't that kind of strange?
Not really. And so generally...
Wait, explain that. Why is that not strange?
So generally speaking, being able to perform for some technical career or any job, you're always learning. You always have to apply new concepts. We've seen over the years that more technology has come about and therefore more needs to continue learning and adapting to those. So job readiness is evolving. And with that, we are seeing that those that were trained 20 years ago have to come back and retrain to be able to continue working in their fields.
Well, let's hear from some of our callers. I want to talk to Brandon and Lawrence. Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
What can you share?
I guess I just wanted to talk a little bit about, from like a student's perspective, is that, you know, my most important class in college was philosophy. And I use that more day to day as far as like conversing with people. But it's so hard to justify when you're paying what essentially isn't a mortgage. Like I had, you know, student loans are $40,000 with a full Pell Grant for 4 years of education, that you have to focus in on something that the employers want, which kind of speaks to Carlos's point there. It's so difficult to think about the general education aspects when really you have to be hyper-focused. My mother graduated in 98 and is still paying her student loans. They've only grown over the years because you can't plan for everything life's going to throw your way. So I don't know. I just found it,
I'm interested in how your philosophy class is useful to you every day.
Well, it really, you know, it helps you communicate in a more concise and clear way. It allows you to frame your arguments in ways that people really respond to. There's more to it than just that, but there's also, you know, ethical philosophy and other things like that kind of teach you, you know, allow you to evolve your own sense of morals and kind of change your own perspective on things, which is really good for me.
Since we're talking about the issue of the cost of education increasingly framing the value from a financial standpoint, do you think that your ability to frame an argument and make an argument has had financial benefits to you, or no?
Well, it certainly helps in job interviews as far as being able to sell yourself in a logical, concise way, because there has to be, you know, when you sit down with an employer, you have to make him more money than you're worth at the end of the day, because they can't pay you, you know, more than what you bring in. So I think it's helped me get comfortable with those kind of conversations for sure. Just kind of give you that frame, but I don't know.
But you can't always justify it.
You can't always justify it. I mean,
I want to hear
you knock one interview and there's no telling if that's going to be the one that pays you any good.
Well, Brandon, I want to get some response to this. Doug Letterman talk to me about this idea of what's useful on a personal level, but what you can justify in sort of the practical area of how your life works.
I love that the caller is talked about philosophy mattering most to him, because to me that sort of gets really to the crux of the issue. We've had governors in a bunch of states. We even had President Obama, who in general was a very big supporter of education, at one point sort of take a dig at art history as a profession. But we've had governors in Florida and North Carolina say they have, maybe we shouldn't be supporting degrees in anthropology. So I think there are obviously things that help you personally and things that are more clearly valued in the workforce. One of the big challenges we have right now is sort of a mismatch, or at least miscommunication, from employers about what they're looking for. If you talk to the CEOs of a lot of companies, they actually really talk about why they need people who can be creative, who can think critically, who can communicate. And those are the things that you get from a general education or from the non sort of skill, specifically skills-based fields and disciplines. When a lot of their HR people are out doing the hiring, they may be checking boxes saying, does this person know how to use this software program, or does this? But Carlos was talking about the sort of need for lifelong learning, and it's clear that the days, a lot of us, I mean, I'm 55, I was sort of on the at the end of this, but my parents, people had jobs forever. I mean, mm-hmm. And you had one job and you stayed in it. The average person coming out of college today is, I forget what the data show, but they're going to have 7, 8, 10 jobs in a pretty short time, and are going to change careers. And the more specific your skills are, the less adaptable you're going to be. So there's a stronger argument, even for workforce, for broad-based disciplines, broad-based knowledge that you then refresh either specifically through a college or university or on the job or through a training program from your company or your employer. So I'm hopeful that the liberal arts and the humanities will remain relevant, because I think we're even in the workforce, as opposed to just personally, I think those kinds of ways of thinking help.
It's interesting. I mean, I know I'm in a studio full of people in the world of higher education, so I have a feeling I know what I'm going to hear about this, but is it possible to learn some of that creativity, some of that problem solving, some of that critical thinking someplace other than college?
I'll jump in and just say absolutely. I mean, people learn both in the classroom and outside of the classroom, and I think higher education is a systematic approach to learning. It teaches people how to be learners regardless of where they find themselves.
Let's turn to Rebecca in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Rebecca.
Good morning.
What can you share?
Well, I kind of wanted to get back to the point that was made a little bit ago about, you know, having a college degree and receiving higher education for the sake of individual gain or career gain versus learning for the sake of learning. So I have an undergraduate degree from a liberal arts college. It's in biology, and I went on to get a doctorate in a STEM field. So I'm very, to some degree, specialized. But I have a lot of liberal arts education in my background, and I think that it's important to keep our focus on learning for the sake of gaining knowledge. You know, at this point, I can speak to science because that's what I do. A lot of the science that's well-funded has to have a specific outcome, and it has to make money. And that's unfortunate because there's so much to be gained from learning in general. I've heard people disparage research on things like tree frogs, but learning something about tree frogs could be informative for how, you know, every species on this earth is going to survive what we now know as climate change. I mean, I think that it's unfortunate to see such a push against intelligence. And I'm very dismayed by the whole concept that people want to disparage knowledge. Knowledge is important. Knowledge is the reason that we have cars and air conditioning and all of the other luxuries that make our lives so much easier than they were 100 years ago.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. I wonder if our guests do feel like what we're looking at is a disparaging of knowledge. Carlos?
Sure, and I can relate. I too, I'm a biologist, and I feel that in my academic background, I have had a great deal of general education that has made me nimble to learning in the different jobs that I've had over the years. What I can share is that we are really boxed in a situation where everyone recognizes the value for general education, but there's a challenge in funding for it. And so if we have an opportunity to address more technical needs and or job readiness, we are taking away from general education so as to reduce and contain cost. What we're doing in that case is that we're really preparing individuals to do the one job and not necessarily helping them carry on in that lifelong learning and evolution of job related needs.
Why is there a challenge in getting funding for general education?
Sure, because there isn't an easy way of measuring the success of that type of learning. And so what we're looking at is your access to jobs, your income level upon graduation. And in general education, you're really doing it for the sake of learning. You're doing it for the sake of being a critical thinker. And so it's not always going to equate to a well-paying job initially, but it's going to result in more of a long-lived opportunity.
I mean, Rebecca talked about being a biologist with very specialized degrees, but also having liberal arts in her background, which points to tiers of higher education also. I mean, do people need more higher education than they used to for it to prove its value, Carlos?
In this day and age, yes. And so what's happening is that for the more general education side, what we're finding is that with a bachelor's degree, there are challenges in getting jobs. And so you'll start going for your master's degree and PhD, and then you begin competing for that same pool of very few jobs available. On the technical side, there's lesser need for the general education, but then it becomes a job hopping situation where you're looking for other opportunities and therefore need to come back and be trained time after time.
Jump in here.
Yeah, this is Doug. What I was going to say, I mean, I think we are starting to see, because what Carlos described is absolutely right. We have seen what I would argue is probably credential inflation in certain fields. I mean, it used to be that you didn't need a bachelor's degree to be a postal carrier. Now you do. We've seen the nursing requirements change from an associate degree to a bachelor's degree, and now we're seeing increasing pushes for ever higher. I was just had physical therapy, and the physical therapist told me that she was going to be increasingly required to get a PhD. So there's real, and I think what I think we're starting to see is because that has led to more debt. And again, it is important to remember, despite those big scary student debt figures that we talked about at the beginning of $1 trillion+, the average student still has less than $30,000. The average borrower has less than $30,000 in debt. That's still quite a bit, and that can be difficult to pay off, as the caller before suggested. But we just need to keep that in mind. But there is more debt, and so I do think we're going to start to see some pushback against the idea of just more education. I think the real question people should be asking is, what kind of education do I need to fulfill my goals? That can be, again, obviously with career in mind, but the idea of always being able to add later. And mm-hmm. There was earlier in the conversation, sometimes people can get a credential or a unit of knowledge, and that's going to be enough to go get a job. And that's fine, and as long as there's an openness and an ability to come back later and get it. And
I think the ability piece of it is the one that I would ask about, because, I mean, I don't know. Are people's lives always set up in a way that it's true that you can always go get more education later?
Well, that's why we're seeing, and we haven't talked a ton about the ways in which higher education is or isn't changing. But listen, we are now seeing a third of all students take at least one class online. We're seeing more, and the change that we're starting to see come to higher education is changes in the nature of what the learning looks like, how it's delivered, the unit of learning. I think we're going to see less emphasis on big degree programs and more emphasis on smaller units and learning of sort of units of knowledge that's sort of broken down into smaller chunks. And so you can get so that it is not just, and that's the change. Most students now are not 18 to 22-year-olds attending a residential four-year college. Most students are working. Mm-hmm. Most students are balancing. And that's what I think the system is evolving toward.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're going to continue this discussion about the purpose of higher education and what people expect out of a degree on KCUR's Central Standard right after this break. You have a little time left to chime in at 816-235-2888, so hurry up and call if you've got something to say. We're looking for student and parent voices, but also voices of naysayers, voices of people who have decided this isn't worth it to me. We'll be back in a minute. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, asking what we expect of higher education on KCUR's Central Standard. My guests are UMKC's Michelle Maher, who teaches higher education administration, Carlos Penaloza, the Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs at Metropolitan Community College, and Doug Letterman of Inside Higher Education. Welcome back, everyone.
Hey, great to be here.
We have largely been defining higher education as college, but that is not what higher education means to everyone. Carlos, could you give us sort of what your definition of higher education, broadly speaking, is, what it includes?
Sure, and I speak from the community college standpoint. We have to recognize who our student body is, and it really splits off into various segments, sections. One of them would be the more traditional general education track student that does want to learn for the sake of learning and providing opportunities for them. Then we have the job readiness, which are a combination of parent needs, industry needs, and student finance needs. And then we have some hybrids. And as Doug suggested earlier, being able to provide opportunities that are a little bit nimble, changing with the times, evolving with the needs, and micro-credentialing to some end where students can come in and out and be able to get a job, come back, and continue with their education. As it relates to the philosophy of higher ed and what we represent is an opportunity to help individuals train for a potential job, but also having at the core a general education component. And so the difference between vocational and higher ed to some end is that component of general education that helps us think a little bit critical and be able to move forward. And so philosophically is having a combination of the gen ed track as well as more field specific.
Let's talk with Jeff in Kansas City. Hi, Jeff.
Well,
what do you want to tell us about? Oh, we just lost Jeff. Sorry to hear that. What I do know about Jeff's call, all I know is that he is questioning not just the value of higher education, he's questioning the value of his high school degree. And that seems like the level of doubt that people have about the process that we go through as lifelong students, that there's a lot of doubt being cast on that right now. And Jeff's call kind of hints at that. And I wonder, Doug, you know, how deep does this doubt go?
Well, I wrestle with those questions every day because I'm trying to decide how fundamental it is versus how linked it is. Like I said, I think a lot of what we're seeing now, I really believe, has been driven by the sort of aftermath of the economic downturn, the mm-hmm. fact that the recovery has been slow and inconsistent and not particularly good on wages. And so as a result, I think that's driven a lot, that in combination with the increased price of higher education and the increased debt of students. That stew of factors has led to increased questioning about and an increased viewing of higher education through the economic prism. I think the questions sort of going forward again are so part of that may fade and ease, but we're also there. You know, you got lots of people out there predicting that robots are going to take away many of our jobs, and so I don't think the job strains and the economic strains are going to disappear anytime soon. So I think it would be foolish to just wait and assume that this is all going to just pass. But I do think that there will be the real important questions are, what kind of education do people need you know, for the economy, and again, I do think it's important. While I, like I said, I'm a strong believer in the value of education for learning and all for and all that, but we have to be real that ultimately a lot of people it has to be helpful, or one of the ways that we get people into successful life and career. And so, to me, the big question is sort of what kind of education. I mean, I think what Carlos, you know, the what kind of education do people need? And I've tried to stop using the phrase college and try to use this lovely phrase of post-secondary education and training, which is really just rolls off the tongue, but is much more fully encompassing of all the different kinds of education that people might have post-high school. And I think more strategic sense of sort of what that's going to deliver for you and what you're looking for is what we really haven't fully figured out.
Right. And that just to go along with that, Sarah has tweeted us that as someone who graduated in the midst of the Great Recession, job readiness would be vital. Let's talk to Marion in Olathe. Hi, Marion.
Hello.
What's your story?
Yeah, so I have an undergrad degree in liberal arts, and I had a dual major in history and Russian, and just had the best time of my life in college. Was just very eye-opening as far as just giving me kind of a love for learning, and, you know, just had a broad range of Greek mythology or Japanese history, and just kind of just took what I was interested in and had, you know, a great time being in all these different clubs. And and I can tell you, you know, after college, I didn't go into those fields, got a degree in something else later, but I've been very successful graduating in the recession, but, you know, I've been very successful getting tons of internships as well as a job afterwards, a great job that I'm, you know, still with, a long-term job, and I can tell you at all the interviews, you know, they don't care about what I did after college. They were so interested in my liberal arts degree and the things I learned and where I went.
What kind of job were you able to get with that, graduating into the Great Recession?
Well, yeah, I went on to get a law degree and then had lots of great internships in the law. And, you know, it was funny because one of my first interviews was with a judge, and, you know, he just loved my resume, all about my history club, all about the Russian club. I mean, he said, I'm not going to interview anyone else.
Thank you, Marion. Thank you so much for that call. The connection started getting bad there, but she was saying that the judge was fascinated by all the clubs and the Russian and everything. But it seems like the law degree was essential to her in getting that job as well. And that brings us back to this idea of how much higher education someone needs for it to be useful in that sense. She also mentioned internships, and I'm curious whether you think internships are now part of the process of, is that an extension of higher education in a way? Because not everyone can survive with an internship coming out of all of this.
Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah. So yes, I think an internship is a great way to better understand what you want to do, but also potentially understand what you don't want to do, while there's still time to make changes. And I agree, there is a trade-off there, because internships are typically unpaid or very low paid, and so you know, it's not feasible to have it be an ongoing thing, but for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or maybe even a semester, I think it's a great idea.
Let's hear.
Go ahead.
I do want to hear from a caller, Emilio, who's joining us, but we'll have some more conversation after this. Emilio, thanks for calling.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. What do you want to know?
So I just wanted to see what your thoughts about a technical degree or 2 years. Or even apprenticeship in the trades, because I work in the trades and it pays very well, and there's a lot of demand, and I know there's just a lot of focus on 4-year degrees and on and masters, but there is a lot of demand for the trades, and it's good careers that you can find in.
Emilio, what trade do you work in?
I'm plumbing and heating, so I'm a work for a contractor in a union, and for essentially a mechanical contractor.
And you look for people with technical with a certificate or,
yeah,
or
so
training qualifications.
People like to work with their hands, so like go through the union and work with their hands. So it's a 5-year apprenticeship, and and I know the past decades that general census has looked down on the trades, and there is a lot of demand, and it's a well-paid career.
Yeah, I mean, Doug, where does that fit in?
Well, listen, that's part of what I was trying to get at, maybe not so successfully with the whole post-secondary education and training landscape, because and listen, that's what, you know, Carlos's institution is at the core of this kind of this part of the higher ed the post-secondary landscape. They do both, but I think we're seeing a lot of interest in and I do think that this country, for better or worse, has probably overemphasized the bachelor's degree and maybe underappreciated the sub-baccalaureate, associate degrees and certificates. And I do think one of the things we may see from this administration, given its emphasis on manufacturing, or at least its rhetorical emphasis on manufacturing, is more attention to apprenticeships. We've seen the President Trump talk about that some. And listen, I think there is no question. That's why I'm trying to get at the idea of more focus on what people actually want to do.
So matching the student with the type of degree.
Yeah. Because I think he's right that there's a lot of opportunity. There are also a lot of very worthless certificates and shorter term credentials, and that's where we need better information about what. And the closer you are to what the workforce does, the more appropriate it is to judge it by job outcomes, I think.
You know, Michelle, I'm curious about, in the field of higher education administration and thinking about it, whether you're seeing new big ideas coming to the table about maybe a reimagined future of higher education, how the field might adapt.
I think we are in the middle of this discussion, trying to figure out where to go forward. I think a lot of that dialogue is around how to better connect with the student population who comes to us. And I think something that I think it was Doug who said, maybe the baccalaureate isn't always the best way to go. Rethinking how to best get people the knowledge and skills and abilities that they want. Thinking outside the box of a specific time frame or a specific way of delivery.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
I think that as educators, we tend to become wrapped up in the idea of semesters and wrapped up in the idea of 120 hours equals this kind of degree. And I think it might be a better idea for us to start thinking about what it is that people want and need for learning outcomes, and how can we better reposition and reformat what we are offering.
So what would be the alternatives to measuring in numbers of hours or breaking the time up as it has traditionally been broken up into semesters, weekday classes, et cetera?
Because Michelle's actually right. I mean, there's a lot of talk about what's called competency-based education,
right,
which is sort of nascent, but it is basically defining. And that tends to make you think you're going to only be talking about, sort of taking us back to the stuff we were saying maybe shouldn't be, sort of a real focus on narrow skills. Mm-hmm. But if critical thinking can be a competency, and you can break that down and show whether people, and when they have mastered that, they move on, and they don't, and they may come to that. So it's less judged by how what's called button seat, you know, how much time you spend sitting in a classroom, and more based on what you actually prove that you can know and be able to do.
But then we're back to this measurability thing. Can that always be measured?
It's hard, and that's certainly one of the fundamental problems, is can you measure creativity? Well, not so easily. That's a legitimate question, but if we focus on it hard enough, we got a bunch of smart people, we can probably figure it out.
You know, we've got a call that I'm sorry I won't have time to get to, but what about the idea of academy? Like, when you have a military academy that is somehow seems like a hybrid of training and some sort of academic program, are there future visions for education that could be along those lines? Anyone? Bueller?
I think we're seeing lots of experimentation, and that's really what we need right now. We have a system that is still pretty good, but under strain, and the most important thing we can see right now is lots of people trying to figure out new ways to do stuff. And if we do that, as I said, we got a lot of smart people, and we'll probably come up with some good ideas.
And I would share too that there is a lot of creativity currently happening, and we're trying to merge the high school experience with the college experience and creating these academies where these students are able to really explore career paths and meta majors, and really helping them make their decisions.
Well, we're out of time, but Carlos Penaloza, Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs at Metropolitan Community College, UMKC's Michelle Maher, who teaches Higher Education Administration, and Doug Letterman of Inside Higher Education, thank you all so much. Tomorrow, we'll have an art show looking forward to big things happening here in town in July. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Danielle Hogarty is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.